Sepulveda Unitarian Universalist Society, The Onion in the San Fernando Valley. My name's Alan Taylor. It's the Tuesday night forum. We meet the second and fourth Tuesday of each month. And Larry has spoken here. This is the fourth time he's been with us. And hopefully he can tell us something about the conference he attended down near the Ambassador Hotel about the Robert Kennedy assassination. So I'll let Larry introduce himself. Larry?
Yes, thank you very much for coming. My name is Lawrence Teeter. I'm Sirhan Sirhan's attorney. I've represented Sirhan since 1994 in ongoing attempts to win him a new trial through habeas corpus proceedings that are currently pending in U.S. District Court in Los Angeles. The Robert Kennedy assassination is the most clearly partisan political crime in U.S. history, in the sense that it was obviously Democrats being killed by Republicans to put a Republican in the White House. Robert Kennedy would have won the presidency had he not been killed. And he had come out clearly against the war in Vietnam. He said that if elected as president, he would withdraw U.S. troops from Vietnam. The powers that be who were committed to the war in Vietnam were not prepared to see that happen, so he was killed. Now, this is not the first Vietnam-related assassination that took place during the 1960s. There were two others. The assassination of John Kennedy is Vietnam-related. John Kennedy gets blamed for getting the United States involved in Vietnam, but apologists for his assassination and people who want to cover up why that assassination took place, or people who don't want to dignify the Democrats, whatever category they belong to, as it happens, wind up overlooking one inconvenient fact, which is that John Kennedy had withdrawn some troops from Vietnam before he was killed. That's indisputable. Martin Luther King was killed after he'd come out against the war in Vietnam, not after he had campaigned for civil rights, but after he sought to link the civil rights movement with the anti-Vietnam War movement. That killing was Vietnam War related. I think it's rather obvious that you cannot understand the Vietnam War unless you understand the assassinations that made it possible. Because John Kennedy would have pulled out of Vietnam. Robert Kennedy would have pulled out of Vietnam. Martin Luther King would have contributed to the building of a vastly reinforced anti-war movement had he survived. The three people who had to be eliminated to allow the war in Vietnam to continue were eliminated. They did what they had to do to keep that war going. Those who don't want to discuss Vietnam can't discuss the assassinations, but those who do want to discuss Vietnam are really powerless to explain why that war continued without addressing the subject of the assassinations. And I mention this because there are a number of people in progressive circles who steadfastly refuse to discuss the assassinations for one reason or another. And that's a most perplexing situation. But how then do they explain why the Vietnam War continued? They can't. Now, before I discuss the Robert Kennedy assassination, I want to discuss the first and most highly publicized and best known of the assassinations, the JFK assassination. This is the 40th anniversary of the JFK assassination. It's also the 35th anniversary of the MLK assassination and the RFK assassination. So we're getting a little distance here. We have one defendant in custody. One person is litigating issues concerning the assassination. That's Sirhan through me. That's the only court challenge that is being brought right now. But the case is in court. The JFK assassination stands out like a sore thumb because there were a number of things about it that made it very suspicious from the outset. First of all, those who watched the news would have heard that the doctors at Parkland Hospital, where John F. Kennedy was taken, said at a press conference that there was an entrance wound in the thorax right here. Well, the Navy and the U.S. government and the Warren Commission and the FBI and everybody else claimed that Kennedy was shot only from behind. And that's the conclusion they used to buttress their trumped-up case against Lee Harvey Oswald, who worked in the Texas School Book Depository. So what the Dallas doctors said about a front shot was terribly inconvenient, and this came out almost immediately. Another thing that happened very quickly was that 3 days after the assassination, a local hoodlum named Jack Ruby walked into a garage full of Dallas detectives and assassinated Lee Harvey Oswald, which made it look as though the police were involved in a cover-up designed to stop the necessity of a trial that would cause inconvenient facts to become a matter of public record. So there were those two facts, and then there were also a slew of witnesses in Dealey Plaza where the assassination took place, provided report after report after report of having heard shots coming from the area of what is commonly called the Grassy Knoll. It's really a hill in Dealey Plaza in front of the president's car rather than from behind the president's car, which is the shooting position that Oswald would have had occupied had he actually been the shooter, which he was not. So the eyewitnesses, the doctor's account, the shooting by Ruby of Oswald in a room full of Dallas detectives, in a garage full, and then added to that is the Zapruder film, a film taken by amateur Dallas movie photographer Abraham Zapruder, who also was a business person, which shows clearly and forthrightly, and you can get this in the stores, the head of President Kennedy being thrown violently to the back and brain matter coming out of the back, indicating a front shot, completely destroying the official theory. But that film was suppressed for years. So there's something terribly obvious about the JFK case. There's something terribly inobvious about the RFK case, because at first glance, it looks like an open and shut case against Sirhan. He walks into a room. He's seen in the act. He's caught red-handed. A gun is taken from his hands. Robert Kennedy is indisputably killed during a shooting episode in which Sirhan undeniably participates. So it looks open and shut, and it doesn't look like a conspiracy. That's the dream of planners who want a case that looks legitimate, because the JFK case did not look legitimate. It smelled almost from the very beginning. And I think by 1966, a clear majority of Americans rejected the Warren Commission's findings that Lee Harvey Oswald assassinated President Kennedy and acted alone. The latest polls show, despite an avalanche of media propaganda, 70% of Americans do not accept the official conclusion that there was no conspiracy. I mean, it's kind of obvious that there was a conspiracy. Now, there are a couple of things that I haven't mentioned that link these two cases together. One is Vietnam. I have mentioned that. The other is the involvement of the government in a cover-up. Well, I'll get into that in the case of both cases, but in particular the RFK case. But the third is the clear imprint of the CIA in both assassinations. Now, I'll discuss that at greater length in the Robert Kennedy case in just a few moments. But I want to begin by pointing to one of the most intriguing similarities or connections between the two cases that has just emerged. You're aware, undoubtedly, that the History Channel broadcast a series of episodes called The Men Who Killed Kennedy. And that one of those episodes concerned a woman by the name of Judith Baker. Judith Baker claims that she was Lee Harvey Oswald's girlfriend. And her story is most intriguing and most revealing as to the connections between these two assassinations. Judith Baker claims that she met Oswald in New Orleans in a post office. They got to chatting, they became involved, and he recruited her to a CIA operation that was designed to conduct research in how to infect Fidel Castro with cancer by way of injection. Now, Fidel Castro was never killed by any means, by cancer or any other means, but this operation seems to have left a couple imprints. One is Jack Ruby, who assassinated Oswald, died almost precipitously in jail after having been given an injection. He died of brain cancer. Second, one of the people targeted by New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison, who was involved in investigating the JFK case, was Dave Ferry, who was connected to Oswald and others involved in that investigation, including Clay Shaw. Well, it just so happens that Dave Ferry was found to have been the victim of foul play leading to his death. But in his apartment, there were rats or mice being used for experimental purposes of cancer research. So Dave Ferry was involved in such research. Now, this woman, Judith Baker, comes along and claims that Oswald recruited her to this operation
that there was a visit made to a hospital in Clinton, Louisiana, for the purpose of recruiting mental patients to be subjects of these experiments. And that Judith Baker initially bought into the idea. She thought it was a great idea to murder Fidel Castro. She didn't stop to think twice about that. But what seems to have turned her stomach and caught her sense of conscience was the idea of using unknowing mental patients as guinea pigs, because these mental patients were not going to be told that the injections they were agreeing to and undergo were non-survivable events. They were to be told that these injections were for the purpose of developing a vaccine against cancer. She didn't think that was right, so she developed trepidations and wanted to withdraw from the program, and she was told that she had to shut up and her life was in danger. Oswald then told her that he had become aware during this operation that there was going to be an attack designed to kill President Kennedy, that he stuck it out of the operation because he wanted to investigate and find out more than try to block it. Oswald apparently did take action to block the conspiracy. It's undeniable that he went to the Dallas office of the FBI and made a report of some sort. We don't know what the report is because the FBI destroyed the report after the assassination. Well, that was convenient. But we do know that around the time he made that report, there was a telex that went to all field offices of the FBI reporting that information had been received recently that an attempt was going to be made against President Kennedy's life. Now, what about this note? Dallas FBI officials claimed that it said, "Leave my wife, Marina Oswald, alone, or dire consequences will follow." Well, I submit, and most researchers agree, that if that's what the note said, it would not have been destroyed. That's the sort of note that would confirm the government's image of Oswald as a hothead. That would have helped their attempt to prove that he was the lone nut assassin. But if that note said what I think it said, which is that there's going to be an attempt on the president's life, watch out, then they would destroy it because they were part of the plot. Now, I mentioned this business about the CIA's attempt to assassinate Fidel Castro because, as you will shortly hear, the CIA's anti-Castro assassination program led to the very beginnings of the plot against RFK as well. And here's how that happened. In January of 1968, around the time that it became clear that Robert Kennedy was going to run as an anti-war candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination, CIA assassinations operative John Rosselli, who was indisputably, according to the Church Committee, involved in the CIA's plan to murder Fidel Castro, undertook steps that would lead to the compromising of a pool of prominent defense attorneys in Los Angeles before the assassination. Now, why was that possible? Why was that important? It's important because that's what was necessary to make it possible for the planners to conduct a show trial in Los Angeles. Remember, they had a black eye in Dallas as a result of the crude, obvious assassination of Oswald by Ruby in the police station. That looked like a cover-up. In order to avoid that obvious public relations disaster, they had to stage the next assassination with a show trial in mind to make it look legit. They also had to have a fall guy whose guilt would appear to be undeniable, because Oswald wasn't identified by any eyewitnesses. Sirhan was identified by many. So it was a big improvement to the sophistication of their plot. I'm going to explain that Sirhan was induced to walk into this room and fire as a result of hypnotic programming to which he was subjected as a result of a very sophisticated operation known as Artichoke, connected to MKUltra, the CIA's mind control operation. They're not the only ones who could do this, but they certainly could do it, and they were actively researching this technology during that period. Another example of the use and perversion of science to carry out political assassinations. But the important thing here, again, is that the person selected to engineer the process of compromising a bunch of lawyers prior to the assassination was John Rosselli, indisputably involved in the CIA's assassination effort against Castro. So that's another clear connection that just emerged between the two assassinations. They both trace back to the CIA's plot to kill Castro. They both have this imprint prior to each assassination. Those operations are going on, and people connected with this assassination in some way are involved in the plots against Castro. It's it's a remarkable connection between the two cases. I think that it builds the case against the government to a virtually fever pitch in both cases, certainly the RFK case included. Now, what did Rosselli do? Rosselli was a defendant in a case brought against card cheaters, accused card cheaters, at a club in Beverly Hills called the Friars Club case, where the defendants were accused of cheating prominent Hollywood figures at cards. And it was alleged that Rosselli and his cohorts were engaged in embezzlement and fraud. Well, this indictment of Rosselli made it possible for him to have access to these defense attorneys. So the government alleged that Rosselli, together with others, went to Las Vegas and bribed a court reporter who had taken down stenographic notes of secret grand jury testimony in the Friars Club case, surreptitiously and illegally obtained copies of these transcripts, brought them back to Los Angeles, and distributed them to these lawyers. Well, what does that accomplish? That means before the RFK assassination, way before, several months before, there's a pool of L.A. lawyers who are corrupted. Now, nobody knows that they're corrupted except CIA Rosselli and the people who are running his operation. It's not a matter of public record because nobody knows that these guys are holding grand jury transcripts. They themselves know it, but that's it. But whoever's running Rosselli and Rosselli know that these guys are vulnerable. So you can expect after the assassination that one of them is going to get the case and that person is going to be caught with these transcripts and that the government is going to make a deal with him to get him to throw the case so the truth about the assassination doesn't come out and Sirhan is thrown to the wolves. Well, that's exactly what happened. What happened is exactly what had to happen to make the wheels of this machine work. That's what they did. Let me back up about Rosselli a little bit. Because Rosselli had been repeatedly the target of FBI investigations during the course of his work for the CIA as part of the anti-Castro operations. There was this ridiculous wiretapping caper in Las Vegas, and the FBI was threatening to go after him. And then the CIA intervened on his behalf, and no, so you can't do that, so the FBI backed off. The Justice Department didn't proceed against Rosselli. The CIA repeatedly ran interference for Rosselli. Then it happened that the FBI, in 1966, this is a year and a half before the assassination, approached Rosselli and asked to speak to him. And he said, I'm not going to talk to you outside the presence of my lawyer. And they said, you don't understand. We've got the goods on you. We've got photographs and documents that show that you and your mother came into the country illegally under a false name. Call us. So he referred this to his lawyer, James Cantillon. And Cantillon called the FBI, and they said, we won't meet with you together with your client. We will only talk to Rosselli alone. Well, what kind of a lawyer is going to do that? So Cantillon said that exactly. He said, my client would be crazy to meet with you. Well, those are the terms. We won't talk to you. We'll only talk to him without outside your presence. Well, so it was arranged that a one-on-one meeting would take place between Rosselli and one of these agents. There was a conversation, and the FBI asked Rosselli to come work for them. Now, this is interesting because they asked him to work for them, but they wanted to make sure this request was made outside the presence of his attorney. So what they were setting up is an operation that would lead Rosselli to set up his own lawyer. And that's exactly what happened because one of the lawyers who got these stolen transcripts was James Cantillon, Rosselli's own lawyer. Before that, there were FBI documents that claimed that the FBI was trying to turn Rosselli into an informant, that they were looking for some means of compromising him, but hadn't yet found it. This is from 1962-63 documents. In 1966, they come up with a means of compromising him. That's the immigration fraud charge. They then talk to him, and in the wake of that, he sets up his own lawyer as well as other lawyers. That sets the stage for an assassination that can go forward safely because it can go forward with there being some guarantee that the government can have a show trial with the performance of the lawyers being guaranteed by blackmail. So the assassination takes place, and here's what happens in the wake of that. Shortly after the assassination, an ACLU lawyer, that's right, I said an ACLU lawyer, shows up at the L.A. County Jail and tries to convince Sirhan, I have just the lawyer for you, Grant Cooper. Well, Grant Cooper was one of the lawyers who was involved in this Friars Club representation. His client was, in fact, the lead client of the case. And Grant Cooper was one of the people who had been given stolen grand jury transcripts by John Rosselli. Now, it's not clear how Weirin would know that, but certainly the people controlling Rosselli knew it, and so did Rosselli, and so did the others in the case. So all of a sudden, you have got this ACLU lawyer showing up, pumping Sirhan to get him to hire one of these lawyers who has stolen grand jury transcripts. And what does Sirhan know? What he knows is that he's represented by the public defender's office right there, right at that time. But, you know, he said, well, the public defender's office works for the same entity as the DA's office. They get the paycheck from the county. So they're on the same team. What a naive statement. But a lot of defendants think that way. So, I mean, he would have been much better off with the public defender's office because the public defender's office could not have been maneuvered in this crude way to throw the case. And I'll tell you how this case throwing took place. So Sirhan agrees to be represented by Grant Cooper. And right after this, something extremely strange happens. In the course of proceedings in the grand jury, in the course of proceedings in the Friars Club case, in July now, this is 1 month after the RFK assassination, there's a noon recess, and all the lawyers except the prosecutor, David Nissen, leave the room. Nissen is there present with the court reporter, who asks conveniently, you know, can someone find me my transcript of the grand jury testimony of Ms. Donato, another grand jury witness? And so Nissen says, well, here, let me go over here to defense counsel's table and see if the transcript is lying here. And then he goes over to Cooper's place at the counsel table and says, what have we here? Here's a transcript that I never gave him. Coincidence of great coincidences. It's lying, according to the prosecution, face up, exposed in plain view on the table, at the place of the table occupied by Grant Cooper. How convenient. Now, I've always been suspicious of this because it seems ludicrous that a defense attorney who had illegally obtained a stolen grand jury transcript, a federal criminal offense, is going to leave it lying in plain view on his placemat, a counsel table, while he walks out and has a lunch with the prosecutor in the room. That's ludicrous. Nobody's going to do that. But who had access to the counsel table? One is the prosecutor of the case, and the other is co-defendant John Rosselli, who was asked to set up his own lawyer, apparently, and did. So after this purported discovery, this so-called discovery, which I think was a plant, was illegitimate, of the grand jury transcript at Cooper's place at the counsel table, there's a big hoopla. The prosecutor wants blood. He asks the judge for an investigation. There's a grand jury proceeding. The FBI gets involved. The press is involved. The press is advised that there's a lot of adverse publicity against Sirhan focused on the fact that his lawyer is a crook, so that nobody will believe what his lawyer says to the jury. And then in December, before the trial begins in January, something very strange happens. There are a couple documents that I have acquired from the archives of the state of California that were long kept secret. And they detail a series of encounters between the prosecution and Cooper that led to his being compromised. On December 23rd, there's a document that says, it's an LAPD document, a secret LAPD document, late word from the grand jury, Grant Cooper's indictment for theft of transcripts or possession of stolen transcripts is expected within the next day or two. So it's going to happen within a day or two of December 23rd. Now, on January 3rd, there's another LAPD document. This document says, FBI agent Frenchie Lajeunesse is monitoring Cooper's dilemma. Well, what's a dilemma? A dilemma is he's being given a choice. You throw your client and save yourself, or you fight for your client and you're done. That's a dilemma. On January 6th, 3 days later, the following Monday, there's a court proceeding in the chambers of the trial judge conducting the Sirhan trial. We're now out of the Friars Club case. We're in the Sirhan trial. In chambers, there appears Grant Cooper, together with A.L. Weirin, the lawyer who referred Cooper to Sirhan. And there's a discussion that takes place. And during the discussion, Mr. Cooper says to the judge, "Judge, as you know, there's been a controversy about my possession of federal grand jury transcripts. I could be indicted. However, I've spoken with the U.S. Attorney in Los Angeles, William Matthew Byrne, and it's inconceivable to me that I would be indicted. I can't imagine that it would happen." Now, let's analyze that for a second. It's gone from "he's going to be indicted within the next day or two" to "he's got a dilemma" to "I can't imagine it would happen." That, to me, indicates that there was a deal cut between Grant Cooper and the U.S. Attorney's Office. Remember, I said that FBI documents confirmed that the FBI was looking for a way to compromise John Roselli, who was already working for the CIA, but they wanted leverage to get him to do something. What they wanted him to do was to set up his lawyer and the other lawyers. Now they found a way to compromise Grant Cooper to get him to do what they want him to do. The deal they've cut requires that he throw the case. And does he throw the case? And that's why the trial turns out as it does. That's why the trial takes place in a way that does not reveal facts that I'm going to give you. And that's why the public doesn't have any idea as to the truth behind the RFK assassination. So now you're going to see a series of extremely bizarre and otherwise inexplicable actions by Grant Cooper that show that he's acting in response to government pressure to get him to throw the case. And mind you, this whole thing was set in motion by bio in connection with a guy, John Roselli, who was involved.